good things. This is an interview by Joy Peterson with Barbara Harp, and it is taking place in Joy Peterson's living room, 5416 Winding Road, Louisville, Kentucky. And do I have your permission to tape this, Barbara?
Yes.
The date today is August 2nd, Tuesday. We're in Jefferson County in Kentucky. Now, Barbara, would you please spell your name, your whole name?
Barbara K. Harp, B-A-R-B-A-R-A, the initial K, H-A-R-P.
And what was your maiden name?
Driscoll.
And would you spell that, please?
D-R-I-S-K-E-L-L.
And are you from Kentucky, or where were you born?
I was born in St. Joseph, Missouri. And I spent up to my teenage years there.
And you've lived in Kentucky ever since?
No. Do you want my whole biography of where I
sure.
lived?
Right.
Okay, when I was 16, we moved to Longview, Texas. I spent my last two years of high school in Longview. And after graduation, my family and I moved to Southern California. And I lived there until after my daughter was born. And then we moved back to Indianapolis in 69. And we moved here in 80 to Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. You say we. What's your husband's name?
Jim James.
Mm-hmm. And he's from Kentucky?
Yes. Now I'm one of the few that is married into the family that are not born and bred hillbillies.
St. Joseph, Missouri is not hillbilly.
No, we're getting up on the Iowa line right there. We still go barefoot, though.
What does your husband do?
He works for Texaco. He drives a tanker.
And would you tell us what your address is?
We live at 3217 Wessel Road in Shively.
And Wessel is spelled?
W-E-S-S-E-L.
How long have you lived there?
3 years.
And where did you live before that? Indianapolis?
Indianapolis.
Uh-huh. And your parents, are they still living?
No.
And they lived in St. Joseph, Missouri?
My mother did. My dad lived in Liberty, Missouri.
And his occupation?
He was a truck driver.
Was your mother employed?
She was self-employed.
Was she a quilter?
No, she crocheted, but she didn't appreciate quilts at all. She gave back everything I ever gave her.
What were their names?
My parents?
Mm-hmm.
My mother's name, you want her maiden name? Was Verla Jewel Weiss.
And you could spell that for us if you will.
All right, Verla, V-E-R-L-A, Jewel, J-E-W-E-L-L, Weiss, W-E-E-S-E.
Thank you. And your father's name?
Jack Edward Driscoll.
Thank you. And your religious preference?
I'm Baptist.
And your age and birth date?
I am 39, and my birthday is January 22nd, 1944.
Where did you go to school in St. Joseph?
Most every school in town over the period of years. We lived in the industrial city area, so I spent a good many years in the industrial city grade school. And then when I went to high school, I went to Lafayette High School.
And you graduated from high school?
Yes, but not there in St. Joe.
Did you ever take any further courses as far as adult education or college or anything of that sort?
I tried bookkeeping once and I still can't balance my checkbook, so I gave up.
When did you learn to quilt?
Now, this is after we moved to California. I was pregnant with my first child, and a neighbor of mine who lived across the street was a Mormon lady, and she came over to show me a quilt that she had made and wanted to know if I was interested in buying it. Well, I was really fascinated by it, and she wanted a whole $8 for it. But you must remember we were newlyweds, and $8 was a lot, so it was $2 down and $2 every other week. So I got that baby quilt, and I still have it to this day. And it wasn't even a patchwork. It was just a pre-print with puppy dogs and kittens on it, and just quilted around. And I think I was more fascinated with the quilting than the actual finished quilt. And that fascinated me. So after my son was born, I went on the rampage at the store buying all these pre-printed fabrics and proceeded to make my brother and sister a twin size reversible, you know, ballerinas on one side and something else on the other, and quilted them up. And then did one for my brother. I think his was race cars and horses, race cars on one side and horses on the other. And then I started ordering the quilt magazines, the quilt books from the newspaper, the Aunt Martha patterns, and I started reading up, and I picked out patterns that I could sew on the sewing machine. That was I'd always been good at sewing, so I was interested in something I could whip up in a hurry, because I wanted to get down to the quilting. And then from there, I just have drove my husband crazy with the fabric and book buying. He knows what souvenirs I'm going to bring back from wherever I've gone. It's going to be a book or a piece of fabric that I haven't seen where I'm at.
What year was this that you were in California and you bought this first quilt?
Let's see, we were married in 63. I'm going to say around the end of 64, because my son was born in January of 65. He was my 21st birthday present. And she took me, neighbor lady, her name was Lee Race. She took me over to her church, I guess that's what Mormons call her. And they had quilting sessions, only they were quilting for other people and for money. And they got together once a week, I think it was a Wednesday, and everybody brought a covered dish. And they got there like at 9 o'clock in the morning and stayed till 4 in the afternoon. And there'd be maybe a dozen women around three different quilts, a dozen around each quilt. And they'd just quilt and quilt and quilt and roll and roll and roll all day long. And that many people quilting, they could get through a quilt in no time at all. But that was the women's function in the church, was to raise money, and that was the one thing that they did. And they didn't give their work away either. I thought they were extremely high priced at the time, and that's the reason why I took it up rather than pay somebody else to do it, because I couldn't afford to pay to anybody.
They had people bring them pieced tops?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they brought, they had waiting lists of people that were waiting to get their tops quilted. And
have you been in other circumstances where you've been aware of churches doing this or been a part of churches doing this?
No. When I joined the Baptist Church in Indianapolis, that's just not something that they do. They have no outside functions in the church other than church activities. So, and the women, they don't do things like that to raise money. So my interest really grew when I moved to Indianapolis and started meeting other quilters. And at that time, that was the boom of the quilt shops springing up.
What year would that be now?
Oh, I want to say about 73, 74, in that era.
Were there periods when you did not quilt?
Oh, there are still periods when I don't quilt. Sometimes I burn myself out on a project and I just have to put it away and do something else. There was a time that I even took up ceramics, and I got ceramic poor, so I had to go back to quilt. You know, you get so many things, give away too many ceramics, and people get to know what's coming next, you know, so.
Well, when you have given up quilting for a while, For how long would you have given it up, and when would you start back, and why?
Let's see. I guess I went back to it just because I missed it. You know, it's. And I became motivated by being around other quilters too. That, you know, at the time I was motivated by ceramics. That seemed to be the thing my sister-in-law and I were doing. You know, I like to do what the rest of the crowd is doing. So then when all my other friends went back to quilting and we started forming, you know, groups and things, then I got really involved in it. And I very seldom put it down totally. I'm usually working on something. It's just one of these days I'm bound to finish a major project if I keep working on the little ones.
How much time do you spend quilting?
I haven't spent any time at all this summer. I think summertime is just known for not being the quilting season. Most all of us can think of something else to do. I do a lot of piecing in the summertime.
Well, I guess what I mean is, do you spend at your quilting, piecing, or whatever?
Oh. Well, yesterday.
How much time do you actually spend sewing, shall we say?
I spent all day yesterday. In fact, we barely got supper. But, I would say at least 3 to 5 hours a day on the average. Now, there are days when I don't pick it up, but those are the days I'm thumbing through the quilt books instead of sewing.
So. You're still quilt involved. Where do you quilt?
I quilt in my living room. I have no place to set up a frame except my basement, and it's an unfinished basement, and it's cold, dark, and dank down in there, and it's nobody down there to keep me company, so.
When you don't actually have one on a frame, where are you sewing?
Living room.
Piecing or whatever.
Living room or dining room. I sew on the dining room table if I'm using the machine. And my chair in the living room, I have, you know, you can tell my chair in the living room by all the litter that's around it.
What time of day do you quilt?
Usually when my soap opera is on, that's early afternoon, and I'm always sewing in the evening time. Almost always, unless I have other outside activities. Or
how long do you quilt at a time, or sew, or piece?
Well, it depends on how interested I am in the project. I'm working on a quilt for my son, and I think I'm in its second year. And it's mainly because the colors and the design don't interest me. It was his design, and he has to keep prodding me to get it done. I am a traditionalist by nature. I try to expose myself to the contemporary, and there is a lot of it that I enjoy and like, but somehow whenever I try to indulge myself with it, I'm never satisfied, and it always bothers me, so I really have trouble completing the project. Traditional problems, patterns, I seldom have a problem finishing.
Tell us about the quilt that you're making for your son.
Well, it was a definite challenge. First of all, it's called King's X pattern. It's a standard pattern. That's the block, and the way it's put together, it's called the Governor's Palace Maze. It is only done in two colors, and it's cranberry red and teal blue, which is fine, one without the other, or I felt like there needed to be a third color in that quilt, and he only wanted the two. Well, they are so, you can't even squint at this quilt and get any a depth or anything to it, because it just, both colors are equally intense. And I look at it and my eyes start hurting. My stomach and everything else. he just doesn't understand that I can move the hoop and quilt what's in the hoop, and then I just have to put it away because I feel like, oh, I have overdone my quota for the day or for whatever period of time. In fact, I have not touched it at all this summer, and he keeps seeing me piecing on his little Christmas tree skirt. And he says, you have other things to do, Mother. And I said, but I don't want to do them. I will complete it. You know, I told him, I said it was a graduate. I said I'd have it done for him for graduation. And he says, Mom, I graduate in June. And I says, oh, I'm at college.
What's this Christmas skirt you're talking about?
It's just a little pattern that American Accents got in, and I'm making it as a display out there, and then I will keep it after that. But it intrigued me. It's all applique, and I loved applique. I really do. And it's just a standard store-bought pattern that I'm...
You prefer to applique over piece or over quilting?
No, I would... I really like it all. It's just sometimes each one of these blocks is different. And so I have not got bored with doing it. It's like doing the same repetitious thing. I've not become bored with it. If
would
I had...
you describe these blocks?
They're all Christmas-oriented. One is a little holly pattern, and another one is a wreath made out of hearts with leaves. Then I have a little poinsettia pattern. Then I have a Christmas cactus. Then I have, I guess you would call that a disselfink type bird with leaves. And then there's another.
How many are there?
There's six all together.
Mm-hmm.
There's six all together. I'm thinking I might, since I did one of these blocks wrong, I put the hearts on at the wrong angle. So I have another block at home. I refused to undo it, and I thought it would still make a good pillow. So, waste not, want not. So, somebody's getting a Christmas present this year that has red hearts on it.
Where do you usually get your quilt designs?
Books. Most of them. I have sat and I love to draft, and I tend to be very good at drafting the traditional patterns. And I find that sometimes when I sit down and start on a traditional pattern in drafting it, I get to thinking to myself, well, what or what happened if this line went here instead of over there, and I start rearranging it. And I have designed a few blocks, but I have never made them up yet. You know, I've never got them from paper into fabric, and I don't know. Most people look at me on the surface and say, oh, what an organized person she is, but if they only knew the true me, I have not 1 ounce of organization. It takes months of planning for me to come off looking extremely organized. You know, if I go on a trip, I just don't suddenly throw things into the suitcase and leave. I'm thinking about this trip from the time I decided I was going to take it, so I know exactly what's going with me. And my husband says it's everything but the kitchen sink. So, and I tend to overdo things, you know, as far as planning. But
speaking of planning, makes me think of your organizational background as far as the Ginny Byer workshop. Would you tell us a little bit about what went into that?
Oh, as far as my organizational background, I had none.
What was it like to organize the Ginny Byer workshop?
Oh, it was... I really enjoyed that. It was not something that there could be a committee on up until the last minute, and there really was never a formal committee. Nancy Stiller was in contact with Jenny and had made the arrangements for her to come, and then Nancy's business picked up and she just didn't have the time to put into the organizing, so I offered to help her, and then after I offered to help her, she got even busier, so I offered to do as much of the organization of it as possible, and then it turned out that I did just about all of it, which, you know, I'm not upset about at all because I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was definitely an experience for me.
Can you tell us, for the sake of the tape recorder, when it was held and How many and what the situation was?
Okay, it was held at the Ramada Inn on the Waterson. It was called the Ramada Inn Airport, Bishop Lane and the Waterson. It was in April. I believe it's 21st, 22nd, 23rd. I've already started to forget. See, once something's over, I just, it's out of my mind forever, almost. Let's see. You'd have to help me here. I don't know.
Well, it was for the Nimble Thimbles.
Right, okay. The Nimble Thimbles decided that we wanted to bring a nationally known quilter to town, and the first thought that came to mind was Jenny Beyer. And we had no idea what the financial circumstances would be. You know, we knew we had some money, but we didn't know whether we could afford her or what. Well, it turned out that after we got her price list, as you would say, we decided that there would be no problem in doing it, and we contracted with her to come. And financially, it was not a money-making project. Our goal as Nimble Thimbles is to provide a service to the community, to educate, and to provide them with information. And so this was open to the public. Of course, we gave Nimble Thimbles priority registration, but we had people from Indianapolis, Tennessee, there's several places in Indiana that came, and from Ohio.
Do you think there's any reason why we shouldn't put on the tape what the costs are in today's world for this type of a workshop?
Oh, I don't. I would have brought the exact figures if I'd known you
would
know. Yeah,
well, I'm just wondering if you can give ballpark figures, because that's part of the history of quilting today, and maybe when this tape
Jenny's fees for the 3 days, she did three workshops and a lecture. Her fees totaled about $1,600.
Was this plus her airfare and
we did provide her with a room there at the Ramada, because we felt like since we were planned so much for her to do, that she deserved a little space at night, you know, to relax in whatever way she likes to relax and find out it's running. But the motel itself charged us nothing for the rooms, provided we let them do the catering, and the catering had to exceed whatever the rooms would have rented for, which was $75 a day for each room, and we had three rooms. So our catering exceeded that. That was no problem there. We tried to price everything as low as possible. The club had decided, a year or two ago, that when we decided that we wanted to do this, that we would underwrite the situation up to about $500. It was never a definite amount, approximately $500. Well, it turned out we underwrote it for about $700.
That much came from the Nimble Thimbles treasury?
From the treasury. Mm-hmm. The rest of it was income from people who came to the workshops. I'm trying to remember how many we had. I would say we had close to 200 women that participated in the workshops. And gentlemen.
Some of them more than one session.
Yes, we allowed the members to sign up for as many as they wanted. It was a first come, first serve, and with the understanding that no member would be left out. So if, say, we had the first 50 women wanted everything, and we still had some wanting, then we had to go back. We would have had to gone back and said, sorry, you can have two, but you can't have one, and so on. But we never really had that problem. There was enough space there that...
Do you remember what you charged for individual sessions, what an individual was paying?
The first workshop was a half day workshop. It was in color. It was Oh. I see, the other two workshops were all day, so they were $35, and that included lunch. And so I'm thinking it was 25 for non-members and 15 for members for that first session.
Then there was a lecture at night. Did that cost anything?
The members were free, and then the tickets were for non-members or guests of members were $2 a piece. There was several other expenses that was involved. You know, we had flowers, the catering for the reception that night wound up being more than planned because, I don't know, when I talked with Treva Lee Lang, helped me with planning the catering because she's into catering. And we, in our minds, we were saying, okay, this is going to be about 9 o'clock at night. These are women who have already eaten, and women don't tend to eat in front of other women. You know, they're very conscious about, but everybody was hungry that night and very thirsty. So we wound up having more punch than planned and things like that. But that's okay. Everybody had a good time and no one has complained.
It was very successful. To get back to our questions, what patterns do you like to make?
Well, I think I've already just, individual patterns or just on a whole. I prefer traditional. And I'm not afraid of the extremely complicated. I'll try anything once. If it doesn't work, then I'll probably never try it again. But I'm not the one that's going to suffer over something to make it work if it refuses to work for me. I like traditional patterns. And every now and then I'm smitten by a contemporary, and I give it a try, and I'll probably go to my grave having tried one more time to do something in a contemporary form and probably never succeeding to my satisfaction, that is.
What makes a good quilt?
Proper choice of color, a balance in the size of the print in the fabric, color is an individual preference. You know, what you like and what I like may be two different things, but just to me, as long as there's a proper balance, and nothing is more monotonous than to see a quilt that is made out of calico prints all the same size, just because, they change color, but they don't, it's a real sleeper. And I think a lot of women are extremely afraid of the large prints. And I think after Jenny was here, I think a lot of the women that took the workshop woke up to the fact that the large prints do marvelous things, that they're entirely something different when they're cut up and put into the quilt. But the quilt suddenly moves and has just dimension to it.
Mm-hmm. Why do you make quilts?
Well, I guess I don't make any more to keep warm because I've got ample for that. I consider quilts suddenly has become or has been accepted as a definite art form, and that's something that was not happening when I first started quilting. People quilted out of necessity or out of a love for quilts, but they just put them together without consideration of what the finished product would look like, and not going about it like an artist, And I have no artistic talents. I can't draw a thing freehand. My husband and I was considering a temporary separation while I picked wallpaper for the house. It's that hard for me. I have blank walls in my house because I am overcome with a wall. I don't know what to do with it, so I prefer to leave it blank than do anything with it. So I have my personal, I have hang-ups when it comes to doing anything artistic. And I'm not a decorator by nature, and I am so in awe when I go to people's homes and it seems like everything just melts together. Like whatever's sitting there, it belongs there. And I'm so inconsistent. so insecure with my decorating at home that only after I've been to someone else's house and I find out they have the same problem do I feel free to invite them over, you know. That, but I feel like, to me, when I latched onto quilts, suddenly I found a little niche that I fit into, and I know what I'm talking about when I say something about it, because I wouldn't presume to come in and say something to someone else about, well, those pictures don't belong on that wall, you know, because who am I to say that when I can't decorate my own walls? So with quilting, it's just, I don't know, I feel very secure in knowing what I'm doing and knowing that I can do it. And most of the time it's putting my mind to it to get that, you know, and how badly I want to get something accomplished. Like, you know, this is a Christmas tree skirt. I don't want to finish it next February. You know? Right. I want it as soon as possible.
What is a quilting bee? This is Joy Peterson. I'm continuing an interview with Barbara Harp. This is the second side of the first tape, first cassette, and this is August 2nd, 1983. We were discussing quilting bees and quilting parties. What do you consider to be a quilting bee?
I don't know. I think my group in Indianapolis that I came from, to me, is the typical quilting bee. We got together every Monday just by clockwork, unless a holiday always falls on a Monday, you know, and so the husbands are always glad to say, oh, they're going to be home today. But it was something to get up for. It was every Monday morning, you know, and Monday's the least favorite day of everybody's week, and all of us would just hop right out of bed and throw those dinners in the crock pot and off we'd go, you know. We'd meet in each other's home while we were piecing a quilt, but when we got down to quilting a quilt, we'd, you know, stay in one house because it's kind of hard to transport a quilt from one place to the other. But we made quilts together. The quilts stay with the group, and I guess I'm kind of getting away from what is a quilting bee, but that was typical for me. Is, you know, we were working on projects together. We never said, you know, I've got a quilt in the frames, would you all come help me? It was never that type of thing. We all wanted to do our own quilts. But
is there a difference in your mind between a quilting party and a quilting bee?
I never give it any consideration. I never give it any thought. A party. Well, I suppose at a party you're supposed to have more fun, so I suppose you're supposed to put bring up. I don't know. Maybe the men are invited to a party. They ought to be real interested.
They're wondering if you've ever quilted with other people, and you were telling us about the Indianapolis group. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that group?
Okay.
Did it have a name as such?
Well, let me go back to how we were formed. It was, maybe I'll eliminate a few of your questions, I don't know, but first there was the Indianapolis Quilters Guild that was formed, and they meet, I think it was once a month or twice a month at a library up there in Indianapolis. Okay, from that group, we found out that we had X number of women that lived all on the same side of town, and we didn't know it until we all got to going to this the quilt guild. And then when we found out about it, you know, one winter I said to my friend, I said, why don't we call them and see if they'd just like to get together some morning, you know. Well, my goodness, we called them, and we had more women than we had chairs. They all wanted to get together. Of course, this is dead of winter, and who doesn't want to have an excuse to get out? But that's how we first called it the West Side Group. And then they renamed it. There was one lady in the group. As you know, whenever you get involved in a group, there seems to be one or two that feel like their ideas are far better than anybody else's, and you must listen no matter what the cost. And so They are now called the IQs, which makes them sound like quite an intellectual group, but that is not, it stands for Indianapolis Quilters, you know, but they call themselves the IQs. And there are many in the group who find that it leaves a bad taste in their mouth when they, you know, they said, I put my books down when I left high school and I don't like being called an IQ. But the group met and it seemed to, they wanted it. No, and they didn't want it every other week. They were going to do it, let's do it every week. So that's what happened. Of course, there was a few pitfalls. We had some young mothers in the group and they wanted to bring their children. And well, we first tried to say, well, our homes are not childproof, you know. And they said, oh, well, we'll look after them. Well, that, it was awfully hard for some of the older ladies who had not had small children in the house and who wanted their day out without having to worry about kids getting into their sewing baskets and stuff. And so there was a little dissension in the group for a while until that got settled. And the decision was, you know, either have a babysitter or don't bring one or the other, you know. So some of the women dropped out, and, but I don't think, they didn't make enemies over it. But you have, whenever you form a group, you have to set guidelines right from the very beginning, because if you wait till things happen, then people's feelings are definitely hurt. And you have to decide, are we going to allow children, and are we going to allow one person to make all our decisions, you know? And so they've had to work things out, and it came to a couple times that they almost broke up over it. But they, some of them decided, well, hey, this is the one day that I look forward to, and I'm not going to let this happen to take it away from me. And so if I have to tolerate a two-year-old, I will, you know? But they made quilts and won ribbons at the NQA show in Fort Wayne. I'm trying to remember what year that was. I think it's 80. Yeah, summer of 80. A quilt that I had helped on had played a big part. I was working at the time, so I wasn't able to be there during on Mondays to help with the quilting. So I'd come on Saturday and mark the quilt for them to quilt. You know, with marking feather wreaths and grids and things like that. So it's always better if one person does that job as opposed to everybody pitching in. So that was my contribution, plus making all the leaves and sticking them in the place for them to applique them down. So I feel like I contribute as much, but I just wasn't there to help with as much of the quilting. And they took the Stearns and Foster ribbon at the Fort Wayne show, the NQA show. It also won a ribbon at the State Fair. This last year in New Orleans, they won the Lancaster Rose entry, which is a gigantic ribbon and a silver platter. Now they've got a problem as who's going to get the silver platter. So, you know, that becomes a problem. You know, they've all decided that the ribbons go with the quilts. Whoever has the quilts, the ribbons stay with them, and that person is responsible for taking care of the prize winnings. And I guess if they make any monetary wins, it goes into the treasury. But they charged like a 25 cents a week dues. And the first quilt, somebody went out and bought all the fabrics, and then we just divided up the price amongst us, and then we all pitched in whatever $5 or less, because there was, right away we had 15, 16 people. And I think it's in, they're featured in Quilt World, this latest issue that's out, I think it's the fall issue that's out, and they're down to 9, which is a very comfortable amount. Any home can accommodate that many women, but with 16 there was, plus children, you know, just sitting people to have lunch became a problem, you know. The quilt stayed in the groups, you know, they drew names, and if you had already won a quilt, then your name just continually gets eliminated, so until everybody has a quilt, then they'll start over again. But they started a friendship block, and it all started with my departing Indianapolis. They all decided to make me quilt blocks, which they managed to do without me knowing. And usually I'm very intuitive about things that's going on around me, and I completely missed this one. I saw blocks in a picture that they had taken. I said, "Oh, what is this?" Which later turned out to be a block for my own quilt. You know, I said, "Oh, what is this?" My friend says, "Oh, Susan is just making some pillow talks." And I bought it, you know. But it turned out to be for me. And those pillow tops are in my quilt top. Which I'm very proud of. And they enjoyed doing that. So after I left, they decided that was something they were going to do for each other. Was each person had to decide what quilt they wanted and provide the pattern and the colors and everything. But they all wound up, not only are they getting quilts as a group by your name being drawn, but they are also getting their friendship blocks plus the work that they do on any other day but Monday.
What is a Kentucky quilt?
Oh, I don't think there's any standard pattern. If you know, maybe there is. I don't know. I think people who think of log cabins and things like that originally think that they're in this area, came from this area. Maybe they did. I'm not much on the into the history of where patterns came from, but just Kentucky-made quilt. Somebody who lives within these boundaries that's made a quilt, you know. Yeah. I'm not a Kentuckian by nature, but this is definitely a Kentucky-made project I'm doing here.
Have you ever taught anyone to quilt?
Oh, yes. I've been teaching for the last 3 years.
What patterns did you use?
We've used Drucker's Path, Dresden Plate, just using one size triangle, forming a block. Trying to think of
I'm going to turn this off for a minute. I'm sorry, we were interrupted briefly by the telephone ringing. We were talking about your teaching quilting. Could you tell us where you've taught quilting and to how many and under what circumstances?
I teach quilting at American Accents out in Middletown. I got started because of Evelyn Vitito. She called and convinced me that this is something I should be doing. I was pretty reticent to start because, you know, it's the unknown. I knew what I was doing, but I wasn't sure I could convey it to anybody else. And so she asked me to sit in on some of her classes out there. I really was afraid of, you know, like what was the class format, what followed, what started and what followed what. And once I got out there, I found out I was joining in. I've always been one that's had to get my 2 cents in, no matter what. It's just nature, I guess. And, you know, I found by the second week, I was going around and talking to the students as much as she was. And really enjoying it, so I thought, oh, this is for me. But I would have liked to have taken Evelyn with me, you know, when I soloed, but she wasn't there. But I really do enjoy it. I feel like maybe I haven't come completely full circle from beginning to now, but I really feel like this is no longer just a hobby with me. It's a definite passion. I see it as something that I will do for the rest of my life. I have thoughts in my head of what I want to do next. That maybe just, I have been drafting the patterns for the pattern of the month out of American Accents and find I really do like that. And I see a need for certain patterns in certain sizes. And I'm thinking that, well, maybe in the future I'll get around to these. I almost have to make an appointment with myself to accomplish some of my projects. But I don't know what my definite plans are, but I would like to do something in the way of a collection of patterns for the shop or
You're employed by the shop otherwise than
yes.
just teaching?
Yes, I work out there as a clerk, and I help the... I'm definitely a lot better in the quilting department than I am the pottery department, because when they want to know who the artists of the potters are, you know, I'm... The blank face definitely is a telltale sign, but I thoroughly do enjoy working out there. It's very seldom dull. There's always something happening.
Do you have any quilt books, and if so, what are your favorites?
Yes, I have a complete bookcase full of them, including magazines. I tend to like to purchase those how-to books that are individualized, whether I'm making it or not at the time, because you never know how long they're going to be in publication, like the Lone Star and the Trip Around the World and the Double Wedding Ring, those specialty things that tell you little tricks of how to do it by machine. And most of the time they work. Every now and then you find a place where they could have been written better, but I tend to like those books. And my favorite book, well, I would have said it was Quilter's Companion until Jenny Beyer came along, and then I have...
Who did Quilter's Companion, do you know?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I really don't.
You were saying Jenny Beyer?
Until Jenny Beyer's books hit the shelves, and then I liked the Patchwork Patterns because that really helped me in my drafting. Because at the time I was thinking of taking a drafting course, but I didn't want to draw pieces of tools and things like that. That's not what I wanted. I wanted geometric divisions and things to do with the compass and things like that. But her book, you know, just immensely helped me, and I really enjoy that. And then her Quilt Blocks and Borders, because she has such a collection of those patterns in there. That if you have Patchwork Patterns and the Quilt Blocks and Borders, you almost have to have them together, because one shows you the block and the other book shows you how to draft it yourself in any size that you want. So I think she's helped a lot of women overcome their fear of not having a pre-printed pattern. That kind of upsets me with people that, you know, if they can't find a pattern and all they're dealing with is squares and triangles and things like that, they don't make their project unless they can get somebody to do it for them. And I really feel like, you know, that's part of it. You've got to get down there and draw some squares of your own, you know.
What do you do with your finished quilts?
Give them away. I have one or two quilts at my house that I made from beginning to end, and they're my children's quilts that I have managed to hang on to. The quilts I have at home is the ones my mother-in-law made and she gave to us, and the ones I've made I've given to friends and family. So I'm going to have to quit doing that if I'm going to have a collection of quilts of my own. I'm just going to have to quit giving them away. But
do you sell your quilts?
Occasionally, yes. Yeah. I recently sold a baby quilt. It was a quilt it was the wall hanging supposed to have been that we were making with the class out of American Accents. So whenever we start a new workshop, I always make what the students are making. So whenever I see a pitfall, I know what they're talking about. Well, whenever we do a thing like this, Midge provides the fabric for us, and she always likes us to use the newest fabrics that come into the shop, and especially things like stripes or large prints or something that we can show what can be done with them, because sometimes they're afraid of those stripes or larger prints. What I wound up making was in pinks and blues and tan, and it was definitely, it said baby You know, I just, the colors and the blocks and everything, it just said, this belongs to a baby. So it was sold, and it, because I'm definitely out of interest there as far as providing a baby to wrap it in, so it was sold.
What do you do with old quilts when they begin to wear out?
Well, I had a couple of quilts that there were two just alike that I made originally when we lived in California. And I have to go back here and say what my husband thinks of quilting. Since he grew up with, you know, they had very little income. His daddy was a Baptist preacher and lived on the good graces of the congregation. And most of the time they weren't too generous, I gather, but his idea of a quilt, mainly because this is what he saw his mother doing, is that you don't go out and buy new fabric to make a quilt. You make do with what you have. You cut up them shirts and those skirts and those dresses and those leftover things, and you just put them into a quilt. Well, he had me convinced that that's what I had to do the first two that I made on the sewing machine. First three, because I made a pile of windmill blocks and got them put together after we moved to Indiana. But I worked on this and I cut up dresses. I mean, I had fabric all over the place. His sister, half-sister out in California, had given me a box of the oldest clothes I think I've ever seen in my life, and I was going to throw them away. And he, no, that's what you make quilts out of. So he convinced me that's what I had to do. So I did it. And needless to say, they were the first quilts that wore out. I still have one of them. It's down in the basement. It gets wrapped around something, you know. It's just something that you use to cover up a pile of boxes or something. You don't want it to look like such a mess. You know, it's something colorful, even though the batting is protruding. But I've never had one that is completely in tatters. You know, nothing left to use. The salvation to those quilts was that I had to buy new muslin to put on the back, so it's not worn out yet. The tops are almost gone, but the back of it, I still have a one-piece unit, even though it is a little frayed.
What would you do if you went to a flea market and got an old quilt that was inexpensive and it was wearing out?
I'm not prone to do things like that.
You wouldn't make clothing out of it, or?
I might, except I have no one to make it for, because my children, that's just not their idea of something. They don't want to go around wearing mom's hobby, you know. My daughter and I just came back from California, and her idea of a souvenir is to buy the t-shirts from every place she's been. And we was in Mary Ellen Hopkins' shop in Santa Monica, and Laura saw this t-shirt that said, "My mom's quilted and our house is in pieces." She says, "I think that should be my next souvenir shirt, Mom." I said, "Oh, let's pass on that," you know. So I convinced her. I said, "I'm only buying things that I haven't seen in our area, the country, Laura." And I says, "I've seen that shirt, and if we really want it, we can get it later," you know.
Well, tell us about Laura while you brought her up. How old is she? And tell us about her quilting background.
Laura's 15. Laura has made a wall hanging, and she also pieced a quilt top for Midge at American Accent, the Dresden plate that she pieced last summer. And I understand Midge sent it off, and the Mennonite lady quilt, or Amish ladies, quilted it. But it's now hanging in a bank somewhere over there on the
Westport Road.
I think. I don't know what bank it's in. I've not seen it hanging. I saw the quilt. But you know, Laura liked making it. It's just that she wasn't thrilled with the colors because they were the dark muted shades, and Mm-hmm. And Laura likes bright, vivid colors. She likes those reds and greens and yellows. She made a wall hanging that was all made out of all solid fabric, and she used the rainbow colors. We sent it down to New Orleans last summer and entered it in the wall hanging category. She got a red ribbon on it. And Laura pieces so finely that when she was showing it at Nimble Thimbles, the women said, "Oh, she's doing that on the sewing machine." And she'd say, "No, I'm not. I'm sitting here sewing it." And they'd watch her sew it. And this kid was getting 12, 14 sewing stitches on her needle, you know, and to the inch. And she was almost that good at quilting, and that was her first quilting project. And I was ashamed to even show her work next to mine, although I did take it to class. Even though I like, you know, I am the teacher, and I like, you know, my work's supposed to be pretty good shape, you know. I'm going, "You want to see something better? You know, this is my 13-year-old kid that's pulling this one off, you know." And I would be sitting there sewing at home, and she'd look over my shoulder. She says, "Oh, but Mom, your stitches are so big. I'm getting 8, 9 to the inch, you know." And she's piecing as if she was trying for those quilting stitches. And I said, "But Laura, all those piecing stitches are on the back side. Who's going to be impressed with your stitches once this is quilted, you know?"
How did she learn to sew? What were her first projects?
What was her first projects? Oh, that. She just picked it up. Well, when I was in Indianapolis, my mother-in-law and I quilted for other people. I had a family room, so the family lived back there, and my living room was kind of barren in furniture, not too much. And so my mother-in-law just lived around the corner for me, so we would quilt 5 days a week. We'd pull off a quilt, if we were lucky, get one done in 3 days. But you must remember, though, that we were quilting about 7.5 hours a day a piece. So that's 15 hours a day total quilting time. And it's easy to sit and quilt when there's someone there to sit and talk with, because you just chatter your way through the quilt. You know, you solve the world's problems and the family problems and everything else over the quilt. We have, you know, she and I sat, we laughed over it, we've cried over it, over family traumas, you know. And I have found, though, I can't watch TV and quilt, though, because the head bobbing up and down trying to see what's happening on TV, you just don't get any quilting done. But I came in one time, Laura kept asking me, could she quilt? And I said, "Oh, no, dear, these are not my quilts, you can't quilt on these." And I came in from the store one afternoon, and there she was. She had pulled her chair up to the quilt, and she had one hand underneath the quilt and one on top, and she was just going at it like she knew exactly what she was doing. And I was panic-stricken when I walked in, because this was a gorgeous quilt that I was quilting for a lady to enter into a contest. And I said, "Oh my word, Laura, what are you doing?" And she says, "Don't panic, I don't have no thread in my needle." And she was just sewing away. I walked over there, and I had to go get a pair of pliers to get her needle out, because she had taken such tiny stitches. She must have had 5 or 6 of them on that needle. She was 8. And so she always used to lay underneath the quilt while I was quilting, because she thought it was fun watching the quilt bob up and down. And she liked to see the designs on the underside, because it's kind of like looking at a stained glass window from the underside. And she always found it fascinating. And so when we moved down here in 80, Laura was a displaced person. She had, you know, been in the same home and the same school for 10 years, and so she was totally displaced. She just could not resolve herself to having to live in Kentucky. Now she wouldn't go back to Indianapolis, but she couldn't handle that. She just really had an emotional problem of dealing with the move. And so I think it was her therapy quilt. Laura's someone with her friends now. When she pulls out Quilt magazine and shows them the picture of her quilt in the magazine that she's got the red ribbon on, you know. And they're really impressed that, you know, she's been published.
Have you had any quilts in shows or contests or state fairs?
Yes, I was a long time doing it, though, because I guess I'm insecure in the way that I don't want somebody to judge my work. I just want them to enjoy it, you know. And I finally got brave enough in 80, and I sent three quilts up to Fort Wayne for the show up there. And I got a ribbon on one. It's a third place ribbon. One was a double Irish chain that I had completed before my move to Louisville. And then I had my friendship sampler that my friends had made the blocks for while I had managed to get it quilted. And I have to take that back. I'm sorry. That one did not get in. I only had two quilts that went up. There was three. I had a baby quilt. I'll get it all in here. There was three. There was a little ship quilt that I had sent. And then I had made my brother for the Christmas prior to that. I had made him a velvet quilt for his waterbed. It was machine pieced and machine quilted. It was done in a quilt as you go method, only it was done quilt as you go in long strips. And it was all velvet, with the back being millium, the coat lining, like satin. And so it was one of these situations where I thought I was making a thing, and it turned out it was a family project, because when I was trying to quilt the thing, they were on one side pulling it through while I was on the other side shoving it through.
This is the second cassette, first side of an interview with Barbara Harp by Joy Peterson on August 2nd, 1983. We were talking before the tape ran out about the velvet quilt that was made for your brother and received a third prize up in Fort Wayne.
Well, I had to write the woman in charge of the show to find out how it could possibly be displayed because of the weight of it. I was concerned about putting a sleeve on it, and I was afraid that millium would get a run in it or a snag. And they were concerned whether it would make the poles that they were hanging on swag, you know. So it was a decision that, you know, it was far too heavy to put a sleeve on, and they just displayed it by draping it over a rack. They had kind of a little Amish setting, so they had it draped over a piece of furniture. So it turned out quite well.
In your opinion, has there been any change in people's attitude about quilting?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. It just, like I was saying before, not only are women going at it like it was an art form, it's being accepted as an art form. I mean, there are quilters out there making big dollars for the work they do. I think of Michael James as one of them, who we've not heard a whole lot from here lately, because I understand that he's in such demand to provide quilts and wall hangings for offices and things like that. But we the quilters have not heard from Michael in a whole lot.
What is the value of quilting?
I mean, the finished product, the actual value, dollar-wise, I wonder? You don't know. The value. I don't, as far as money-wise, a quilter is never paid what it's worth if she's doing it for someone else. When I quilted for other people, it started out at like 15 cents a yard of quilting thread. That's the only way I could do it honestly, you know. That prevented me from overcharging on a quilt I didn't want to do, you know. but that it's progressed up to the point where I think women are getting 50 and 60 cents a yard of thread. If they're not, they should be.
How many yards of thread are used in a quilt?
On the average, a spool of thread is 250 yards, a regular spool. And unless it's a quilt that needs to be very closely quilted, if it's something like a flower garden where the person wants each individual hexagon quilted, now that quilt, if it's a large one, that can take up close to three spools of thread. That would be 750 yard thread. Most quilts on the whole, you can quilt with approximately one to two spools of thread, depending on how much quilt. If you're just doing outline quilting and just non-decorative, non-ornate, you know, if it's a utilitarian type quilting, then I would say one to two spools. But if you're getting very ornate, it's going to use a lot more. Be a lot of feather work. But if for financial value, go for broke if you're making something to sell, you know. It's up to you. If you price yourself low, I think people don't think that your work is as good as someone else's. And if you, I don't mind telling you what I got from my baby quilt, which it was appraised at $600, which in my estimation, nobody ought to pay that kind of money for a baby quilt. Not if they plan on using it. I think it was a friend of mine who appraised it, and I think she was going with the opinion that where it was going, it ought to pull more money. But that wasn't my opinion. My sister is dating Glenn Campbell's road manager, and Glenn Campbell's wife was expecting. Well, I just in jest said to my sister, tell Bill if he wants to buy a quilt to give to the new baby, I've got one that I'm working on, and I'll sell it to him for $600. And my sister said, he ain't going to buy it for $600. I said, well, I didn't plan on selling it for that price anyway, but I wound up getting $150 out of it, which I feel was a fair price for it, because it was a small 35 by 48, 50, you know, quilt. And I had a lot of quilting into it, and there are those that are out there that probably say I should have held out for more, but the thing is, I was not selling it to Glenn himself. Maybe I would have held out for more if it had been Glenn himself. I was selling it to one of his employees, you know, so. And I think I have got more than $150 worth of satisfaction in knowing whose kids wrapped up in my quilt.
What are your favorite colors to use in a quilt?
I would say I'm a blue person, but I haven't made a blue quilt yet, so. I love the cranberry colors, and I have a whole collection of fabrics at home. I could probably make 6-8 quilts and not have to buy anything. If I could just, like I say, I need to be motivated and make an appointment with myself. You know, I think to myself, oh, well, if I use it in this quilt, I may need it later, you know, since I haven't bought yards and yards and yards of it. So I guess I'm hanging on to it for posterity. You know, Lars, my daughter says, you're hanging on for me to decide what to do with it after you're gone. You know, and that's probably right. Because that's what my mother did, you know. We were having to decide what to do with her stuff that she was saving. But, I forgot what the question was. What?
Oh, we're talking about colors.
Oh, colors. I like cranberries and navies. I like what I'm working on here. It's just red and greens. But it's not a bright green. It's a deep moss green, I guess you'd call it. I don't know. Since Jenny Beyer was here, I have suddenly started looking at fabrics much in the way she does, not so much in the colors. I love her work, but she picks colors that I would never work with. Her quilts are all on the very dark side. which I tend to like the more clear colors, but I do like, you know, the muted blues and things that are out now, and the mauve colors. I do love those colors, and I am trying to buy them, so if I find a project later when, you know, we may have a yellow year come around where there's nothing but yellow on the market, you know.
What are your favorite fabrics?
I use 100% cotton 95% of the time. I won't say no to a blend if I know exactly what I'm going to do with it. If I'm going to applique with a blend, appliquing with a blend is very hard because, you know, it wants to resist a crease, and it's that I when I talk to my students, I discourage them. I tell them that a fabric with a polyester blend is like someone who has natural curly hair. You want it to do one thing, and it's going to do what it wants to do. So just I try to avoid it, and especially anything that's over a 50-50. And I think a 35 poly, 65 cotton, if you're going to go for a blend, that's a better blend. But as far as brands, I don't limit myself to brand, you know, the type of whoever's manufacturing it.
What about your thread? What kind of thread do you use?
Right now I'm using up lots of tail ends. This one's on a wooden spool, so you know it's been around a while. When I'm appliquing, I just use whatever I've got on hand, although 100% polyester thread is about the meanest thing anybody could possibly try to hand sew with. You spend more time trying to get the knots out than you do getting any sewing done. If I'm going out to buy thread to applique or to sew with, I will piece with quilting thread.
Is that cotton or is that?
It's a cotton poly blend right now that we're carrying out the shop. I don't know. Trying to think of the brand.
You don't buy 100% cotton thread.
I would never say never.
I mean, you don't make an effort to find that for your projects.
No, I will look for. I think cotton covered poly is. You know, there's too many other decisions you got to make besides running around trying to find the precise thread that you need when there's quality thread available at every shop. You know, you just have to be particular as to. My theory is just avoid at all cost 100% polyester threads. Cotton covered polyester is.
What about batting? What batting do you prefer to use?
I use Mountain Mist mainly because that tends to be what's available, and that's what Midge carries at the shop.
Is it 100% polyester?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Have you used the Fairfield Cotton Classic?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't used it at all yet.
Have you used wool bats or silk bats?
No. No. I tried Yours Truly's brand of batting once. And dislike it immensely because it's like a Brillo pad, and it's not uniform in thickness. You have your thick and thin spots, and that doesn't lend a consistency in your quilting. And one other that I do like, I like Fairfield's polyfill quilt batting. I do like it, although it doesn't give you, you know, a puffy quilt if someone is looking for that. It's not a fluffy, but it's very easy to handle when you're working with it because it just stays put. It's consistent. I think that's the one thing I look for in batting is consistency.
How have the materials used in quilting changed?
Well, for years, batting, Mountain Mist was the only one that provided the batting that had a glaze on it that you could even get the dumb stuff out of the package and unfolded. And I had an awful time finding it when I was in California when I first started quilting. Penny's was carrying a batting, and I would spend hours just trying to unfold the stuff because it was trying to unwind like a roll of cotton or something that was just all sticking to itself. It was like cotton candy. It was just everywhere. And I really didn't understand what bearding was until, I would say 8 or 10 years ago. And then I realized, well, I've been putting up with bearding all these years because as I quilted that stuff, it would follow my thread right out of the quilt, you know. And there was a woman in Indianapolis. Her picture's in the quilt world this time. Her name's Burl Poland. She had this problem with the quilt, and she used her husband's electric razor on it, and it worked. It trimmed. She shaved her quilt when she got done. It worked, although next time he tried to use his razor, it chopped up, he made chopped liver out of his face, so he just gave her that razor to shave her quilts with.
What makes a good quilt stitch and why?
I think good quilting does not mean that it has to be super tiny. I think gone are the days that we're going to see the quilting that we saw down at the museum this past winter, where they were getting 14, 15, 16 stitches to the inch, because they made their own batting, and they made it as thin as they wanted it. And I think most of us who have quilted any length of time could take two pieces of fabric and put a couple of layers of tissue paper between it and get some extremely tiny stitches. But our batting is so fluffy, I think, you know, we're going to see maybe 10 stitches to the inch. But I think the 16 stitches to the inch, people are getting that are extraordinary people. I forgot what the question was on the quilt. Oh, what makes a good quilting stitch? I remember now. Consistency, to me. I tell my students that if all you can get is 5 stitches to the inch when you start, be satisfied with that. Work on that 5 stitches to the inch till each stitch looks like the other one. And they're consistently the same length. I said, then try putting in one more stitch. And I said, then when you get six of them to the inch that are all looking exactly alike, then shoot for one more. It's a rare occasion where somebody can sit down with their first quilt and pull off 8 to 10 stitches to the inch. My daughter being the exception, you know. I mean, the kid's hands look like chopped liver, but I mean, she pulled it off. But
if you ever embroider on your quilts, do you use cross stitch, crewel, or another type?
Well, I was going to ask you, Joy, if you do any embroidering. I've got this little bird that needs an eye on it. I don't embroider well. I found out I can get away with pulling off a split stitch before I can pull off a satin stitch. Satin stitches, I've never managed to do. I can cross stitch, I can do the French knots. I tried that candle wicking and I found it very boring because it just, well, it just made me nervous, so I never finished the project I started on. So I'll not be a Charlotte Willis and have a candle wick quilt because I just couldn't stay with it. I'm not real creative in the embroidery.
Do you sign your quilts, and if so, how do you sign them?
Yes, I try to sign them in some way. The quilt that went to to Glenn's baby, I got my name on it, but I try to do it in a very obscure way. I don't like to see someone's name embroidered in black in the center of a quilt. I think that's a little tacky in my estimation. I think, you know, signing a quilt should be done subtly, or, you know, on the back, or, but not extremely bold. I just put my name, Barbara Hart, at 83 on it. 82.
Did you embroider it? How did you sign it? With ink or with thread?
With thread. I used Sunshine's Joe's little back stitch. I find that quite creative for me. I was just putting my initials on it and the year. But I guess I have never just found a standard way of signing it, you know. I might get more creative when it comes to my kids' quilts, you know. Love forever and ever, Mom, you know.
Do you belong to any quilters organizations?
Oh, yes. I belong to Louisville Nimble Thimbles. I was president of that organization last year. That's the 82 year. I belong to Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society. Basically, I give them the use of my dues. I just find it's awfully hard for me to attend all the activities that's going on. The family does expect to see my presence at home occasionally. And I belong to NQA. Those are the three organizations I belong to.
The National Quilt Association.
Mm-hmm.
What older quilts do you own?
Oh, let's see. I've got a bow tie quilt that my mother-in-law's older sister made most of the blocks. And it's done in those old blues and reds, the cranberries, the shirt fabrics that they used. And it has cotton batting in it, and there are some of the fabrics, some of the little bow ties that are kind of wearing out, and the batting is sort of showing through. Well, I just let it show through. We still like it is, you know. And the one reason why we have it, it really belongs to, I have another one, but I can't remember the name of it. It's much like that. She's had to fill in some of the blocks with the current fabrics that she had that kind of went with it. But one of them belongs to my daughter because Laura was named after this sister who's long been deceased, but it was a favorite sister, I had just said, you know, if there was any quilt that you have that your sister Laurie made, would you consider letting Laura have it since she's her namesake, you know, so. I think it means more to me than it does to Laura. Maybe when Laura settles down and has a family of her own, she may get into nostalgia like I do. So right now it's on the shelf at home.
What can you tell me about quilters in your family that we have not already discussed?
There are no quilters in my own family. My sister tried it once and refused to cut her nails to put the thimble on, so she has toe catchers for stitches. Like I said, my mother never really appreciated quilts, and everything I gave her, she gave back. She preferred crocheted afghans, which I must admit, I have never appreciated. You know, you've seen one granny quilt, afghan, you've seen a multitude of them. It's like the flower garden, you know, they're everywhere. When my grandmother passed away in 80, we found a quilt that it was just a nine patch. It was just navy blue polka dot, small polka dots, and white, and then set together alternately with a plain block, which made kind of like an Irish chain. I guess that's what it would have been. Excuse me. But we don't know whether she made it or whether it was someone else in the family or what my sister has it. There was several quilt tops that Grandma made that my mother-in-law and I quilted up two of them for her. And I still have a set of applique butterfly blocks that I spent several years looking for the fabric to set it together with, because the center of it had this dusty rose flower in the center. Well, for years, those colors, muted shades, were just not available. Now, and then I found it, and I still haven't set it together. It's just, you know, it's just not talking to me. I keep looking at it thinking, well, I've got 12 blocks. I really hate to set it together in a simple block and average sashing. I keep thinking, gee, I'd really like to do something extremely creative in setting this together, and it's just, you know, I keep thinking about it. She has used the buttonhole stitch in black all around everything, so I keep thinking, well, maybe a touch of black in the, like a one little half-inch black strip in there before I put the sashing or something. But like, well, one of these days I'll accomplish it. But as far as other quilters in the family, I did not know what a real quilt was until my neighbor in California brought that over. To me, quilts were things that, they were bedspreads. You bought them out of the store, ordered them from the catalog. They just didn't mean anything to me. And then when I got that quilt and I got to looking at it, and all I could say is, well, golly, it just looks like a running stitch to me. What's the complicated about it, you know? And what I found amazing for her, my neighbor's quilting, was that the lady had had polio, and her left hand was totally useless. She'd had it, had surgery and had it, it was more or less frozen in one position. And she would get that quilt underneath there, and she'd just, her stitches had come through on the top of her index finger, and she just pushed back. Well, I mean, where we use the tip of our finger, she was using the whole side of her finger, and she had these little stitch marks and calluses all up and down the side of her her index finger. And the work she did was just absolutely gorgeous, considering she only had one decent hand to work with, because she couldn't grasp the fabric. She could place the fabric in her hand, but she couldn't hold it, put the clinches on it, you know. But it was,
when I first went into Nimble Thimbles, I heard a story about some quilts that were at your house that were made by your mother-in-law.
Yeah.
I wonder if you'd tell that story as a conclusion to our taping.
Okay. I had three brand new quilts. We were supposed to have been transferred to Louisville about 5 or 6 years ago. That transfer suddenly got changed to us to go to Chicago, which we weren't happy about. And we don't care for those kind of winters that they have up there. And I had these three quilt tops that had not been, two quilt tops that I had made that had not been quilted. And my mother-in-law said to me, she said, let me quilt them up for you as a going-away present. She says, you're going to need them up there. So she quilted them up for me. And she had made two postage stamp quilts for me. My husband and I have twin beds, so she'd made them bedspread size.
What size were the postage stamp blocks? I mean, the pieces?
The pieces, she had used a yardstick to measure the fabric, so after it was sewn together and everything, they were less than an inch. About maybe a little larger than 3/4, I don't know. But I had all three. I was going out to a quilt shop in Indianapolis, and I wanted to show the owner the new quilts that my mother-in-law had made for me. Well, the postage stamps were new too. And so I had put them in a large plastic trash bag to tote them out there, and showed them to her. And then I came home, and as I came in the door that afternoon, I set the quilts down by the stereo, and there was an urgent message. A dear friend's father was in extreme bad condition at the hospital, and so I rushed out there to be with her, totally forgetting about the quilts, just left them sitting. This must have been on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday. Sunday morning, my husband had to go to work, and he left his closet door open, and I could see his postage stamp quilt laying on the shelf, and I thought, I think I'll really fancy it up today, and when I make the beds, I'll put the quilts on the bed. I laid there thinking, well, there's his, where's mine? Oh, mine's in that. I took that out to the shop. It's out there in the plastic bag. Plastic bag. That plastic bag wasn't there last night when I went to bed. And I flew out of bed. That bag was totally gone. And it had been gone since Friday. And it took me till Sunday to miss it. You know, it was just, you know, sometimes life gets caught up with you and you're totally unaware of what's happening around you. And it was winter time. We had a habit of gathering the trash the night before and setting it by the front door, so whoever was the first one out would set it out on the curb, because we didn't like to put it out at night because the dogs always tore it up. And my husband was the first one out, and he had assumed that was all trash, and he just whooped it up with everything else and sat it out on the curb. And my son woke up to this hysterical laughter. He says, "I couldn't figure out what Mom thought was so funny at 6 o'clock in the morning." He says, "I laid there listening to her laughing, and I got thinking, I don't think that's laughter." And I was just pacing the floor, you know, and I called over to Texaco, and a friend of ours answered the phone, and I says, "Oh, Arnie, is Jim there? Has he left yet?" You know, and he says, "Oh, God, Barbara, what is the wrong?" I says, "Oh, it's just, has Jim left?" He says, "He just pulled out, you know." And this man was coming unglued because he thought something terrible had happened to the kids, and I couldn't converse with him. And he says, "I was just short of just putting the phone down and jumping in the truck and driving over to see what was happening, you know." And all of a sudden I said, "You're going to laugh." But I'm crying the whole time. I'm saying, "Jim threw 3 quilts away." I says, "I just now realized it." And to this day, whenever we go back up to Indianapolis, the guys say, "Are you still married? I see." "You finally forgiven him for throwing the..." I mean, that is a standard joke up there. And I have apologized to Jim over and over again for being so hysterical over the situation, especially calling work. And but to me, the world actually came to an end that morning. You know, it was... I have felt devastated since then, you know, the loss of a family member and things, but it was the same devastation I felt that day when I 3 quilts were thrown away, you know. They were as near and dear to me as possible.
Could what possibly a story. Be.
Oh. And my friend that was father was in the hospital, they had to put all his bedding in these red plastic bags to denote to the laundry that they were contaminated, you know, because he had a bad infection. So when they kept stocking his room with these red plastic bags, she kept snitching me one, so I have a couple of big red trash plastic bags that I use that are now getting holy, but that says, "Stop, don't touch me, I am not trash." But that was, and then I called my insurance agent and tried to find out if it possibly was even covered on my insurance, and "I don't believe you're covered for..." I said, "Were they stolen?" I said, "No." "Were they destroyed by fire or flood?" And I said, "No." And he said...
This is side two of the second cassette. I'm taping Barbara Harp in my living room. This is Joy Peterson, August 2nd, 1983. And we were talking about the 3 quilts that were taken out in the plastic trash bags and left beside the street for the garbage men to take by Barbara's husband. I think we're about to conclude this tape, but I thought we'd add a couple more things on it. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add about this instance?
Well, other than when I was talking to the insurance man, you know, I was trying to find out if that was possibly covered, and he said, "Well, you're covered for everything, but you're not covered for misplaced goods." And I said, "Well, that's a polite way of saying it." I said, "What you're trying to say is I've got coverage for everything but stupidity." And he says, "You said it, not me." So.
Well, how did your mother-in-law react to this?
She suffered with me momentarily, but she's the type, you know, that... Those are only things in life that you're not going to take them with you anyway, so you shouldn't panic over them. But she promptly set forth to make me another postage stamp. So I've got two postage stamps again, but it took her three tries for me to get to keep two of them.
There's one other thing that I've noticed while we've been sitting here doing your taping, and that is that you notch your thread for your applique work, and I assume for other work, in a rather unique way. And I wonder if I were blind, such as the tape recorder is blind, if you could describe for a person how you go about knotting your thread.
I'll try.
All right.
I'm going to have to go through the motions here as I do it. I thread my needle. I use single strand of thread. I ignore the short strand of thread, and I hold, this is presuming everybody's right-handed that I'm explaining this to, I hold the needle in my right hand with the point going up. I'm holding between my thumb and my index finger with the point upward. I then hold the longest tail of thread between my thumb and index finger of the left hand. I then lay that needle on top of the thread that I'm holding, the tail of the thread. And then now I'm holding the thread and the needle in my left hand all together, with the point of the needle still going straight up. The thread that is, not the tail end of the thread, but the end that is going toward the needle, let's say, I wrap it around the needle twice clockwise if I just want a standard knot. If I wanted something that was for basting, then I could wrap it three or four times or however many times to make as fat a knot as I want. Then I wrap it around there, then I hold my fingers snugly around that wrapped thread that's on the needle, then I take my thimble on the other, my right hand, let's say, and push that needle straight up, and holding that wrapped thread, I keep my fingers pinched together and I pull the needle straight on up, and then I have a knot. And yeah. I think there are a lot of people who embroidery and things like that tie a knot like that. It's a consistent knot. The knot is always the same size, as opposed to taking it and rolling it between your, wrapping it around and rolling it, you come up with different size knots, and they don't all, when you're quilting, they don't always pop through the fabric without making a big hole. Or
do you think of anything else that we might add on this tape that would help a quilter, or that you would like to add in for any reason?
No, not really. A lot of people have asked me, you know, everyone seems to think that I was inspired by my husband's family to take up quilting, and that wasn't so. It became the thing that gelled us together, my mother-in-law and I, because it was a common passion we both had. But she never taught me how to quilt. In fact, I never met my mother-in-law until my son was 18 months old. We lived in California and they were back here in Kentucky, so they had to like me because I'd already given them a grandson. They had no choice, you know. So other than that, that was about it. I do have aspirations, though. I envy Midge and I envy Pat Scovel for having a quilt shop. I would just... Midge tries to have, you know, as full a quilt shop as she can provide, but, you know, her first love is the pottery and everything. To me, I think in Louisville there are quilters that are hungry for a more complete shop that would devote all, the whole shop is devoted to their needs. And oh, I would just give anything if that could be me that could open that shop, but I seriously doubt that would happen. I'm too busy doing other things, but if somebody would, I think there is a definite need for it.
Thank you very much
for
this interview.
Welcome.